history. Don't know much biology. Don't know much about a science book. Don't know much about the French I took. But I do know that I love you. And I know that if you love me too,
what a wonderful world this would be.
Don't know much about geography. Don't know much trigonometry. Don't know much about algebra. Don't know what a slide rule is for. But I do know
one and one is two.
And if this one could be with you,
what a wonderful world this would be.
Now, I don't claim to be an A student, but I'm trying to be. For maybe by being an A student, baby, I can win your love for me. Don't know much about history. Don't know much biology. Don't know much about a science book. Don't know much about the French I took. But I do know that
I love you.
And I know that
if you love me too, what a wonderful world this would be.
La ta 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 ta.
History.
Yeah, but I do know that
I love you.
And I know that
if you love me too, what a wonderful world this would be.
Thanks for listening to great speeches and interviews on Access Sacramento and The Voice. I'm Steve Lerman. Today's program starts out with progress and climate change. Ronald Wright speaks of the urgency to deal with climate change. He also talks about civilization's exploitation of nature leading to collapse. He mentions how addiction to social media eliminates reflection time in societies demanding instant gratification. Ronald Wright is the author of A Short History of Progress. And then after that, democracy in Iceland. In the spring of 2011, voters in Iceland had to decide whether to pick up the tab for mistakes bankers made before the financial crisis.
My guest today, Ronald Wright, is an unusual combination of successful novelist and nonfiction writer, with at least 8 books to his credit over the past 20 years. They began with Stolen Continents, The New World Through Indian Eyes, published in 1993, which was hailed then as the best single history of the American conquest, as it gave voice to the voiceless, of which the great Uruguayan writer Eduardo Galeano asked, "Do you want to know how American Indians discovered Europe? Read this book, as I plan to do." This was followed by A Scientific Romance, a novel in 1999, Time Among the Maya, Travels in Belize, Guatemala, and Mexico in 2000, A Short History of Progress in 2005, Stolen Continents, 500 Years of Conquest and Resistance in the Americas, also in 2005, What is America? A Short History of the New World Order in 2008, An Illustrated Short History of Progress the same year, and Cut Stones and Crossroads, A Journey into the Two Worlds of Peru, but in 2009. Ronald Wright lives in Vancouver, British Columbia, where I reached him a moment ago. Welcome, Ronald Wright, to Takes on the World.
Good to be here. Good morning.
I'm very, very, very happy to have you with us. We have a lot to get into today, but I want to begin with a subject that is very much on the mind of many of our listeners. In your lengthy interview with Chris Hedges earlier this month, you spoke of your concern about the collective failure of our species to respond to climate change. On Monday, President Obama spoke as if he is now serious about confronting the subject, which both he and Mitt Romney avoided on the campaign trail, while boasting about the increased production of fossil fuels during his first 4 years in office. Obama was speaking about the increase in oil extraction from domestic tar sands that has some domestic oil experts predicting the U.S. will soon become a dominant player in the global fossil fuel market, thus accelerating the problems caused by climate change. Can he and we have it both ways?
You mean can we up production and deal with climate change?
Yeah. That's what he seems to be telling us at different times.
Yeah, I know. I think politicians definitely they always want to have it both ways, but of course, nature isn't quite as forgiving as that, and there's now really no question that the carbon emissions are storing up problems for the future. And in fact, we're already beginning to feel the problems right now. I just heard something on the news this morning that the insurance claims in North America, the leading cause of them is no longer things like fires, but is weather events, roofs being blown off, stuff like that. So that's a real indicator of how we're not simply just gradually warming the place up, which, you know, to people living in Canada, it doesn't sound so bad, but we are destabilizing the climate. And one of the sobering thoughts I sometimes have is that really the whole development of civilization from the discovery of agriculture after the last ice age, which ended maybe 10,000 years ago, roughly that, all of that has been possible because of a relatively flat line on the world's climate. It hasn't fluctuated during this past 10,000 years nearly as much as it normally does. So in destabilizing it, we may very well be bringing about an end to the conditions in which we can produce predictable food supplies and things like that. And, of course, you know, I don't need to to tell you what the consequences of that would be.
Well, you have written about this in the past. You've gone through civilizations that have arisen, and you write about after they've reached their top, they've done the most they can do, they suddenly start to disintegrate, and things that were done that were considered progressive innovations end up having dark sides that help to cause the demise of that civilization. Perhaps you could elaborate on that.
Well, in A Short History of Progress, which actually was published here in 04, and it was the Canadian Broadcasting Massey Lectures that year, I came up with the term progress trap for something which starts off as a very good, or at least a very seductive idea, something that makes life easier for people, but which when it reaches a certain scale or goes on for a certain length of time, becomes a dead end and in fact, can lead to disaster. And there have been many examples of these things. I mean, one of them I point to in the book is the development of irrigation by early civilizations, especially those in what is now Iraq, the Sumerians. You know, they came up with this great idea, irrigation. They can feed more people, build bigger cities, expand their populations. But what they didn't know is that they were making their land saltier and saltier, little by little. And it took hundreds of years, but eventually it got to the point where they said their fields were turning white. And it became so saline that large areas that were then extremely fertile are still deserts today. And so the very thing that built that civilization destroyed it. That's one example of a progress trap. Another one would be nuclear weapons, you know, where when you make a better gun, you get ahead and you dominate other people or you kill more game. But when you make a weapon that is so terrible you can never use it, then you've reached the dead end of a progress trap.
How about the issue of nuclear power without the weapons, the trying to dispose of fuel rods that have been used and are not useful for producing power, but are radioactive?
Well, nuclear waste, of course, is a huge problem and is the Achilles heel of nuclear power. I'm not an advocate for nuclear power at all, but against that, we have to consider what the other options are. And the waste products from burning coal and oil are probably more pervasive in the long run. Nuclear waste is a horrible thing to have around. I actually once lived in a town where there was nuclear waste, but it is relatively localized compared to carbon emission. I don't know which is worse. It's all a matter of the scale, again. How many power stations powered by one thing or another? But what both of these things point to is that we've got to find other ways of generating power, and also we've got to make do with much less. I mean, we in North America, both Canada and the States, and I think Canadians are probably even worse, use twice as much energy as Europeans. But we're not twice as happy. We don't live twice as well. We are simply wasteful.
Well, I don't know about Canada. I've not been to Canada. But, for example, the public transportation in the United States was deliberately attacked and essentially put in mothballs at the end of World War II to expand the highways and the automobile. And the country hasn't recovered. People still believe that they need to use their automobile even when public transportation is available. And there are many areas like in the county where we live, public transportation is a joke. And in similar areas in Europe, up in the mountains, you will find buses running regularly and people using them. It's part of their life.
Yes, that's one reason for the big difference in energy use. This is another example, really, of a progress trap because North American cities developed mainly in the 20th century. Population expanded enormously during the 20th century. And because of the automobile and the infrastructure and the cheap gas, encouraged these sprawling types of cities with low density. And whereas in Europe, the cities are mainly much older than that and were, you know, began in the horse and buggy era, and so are much more dense. So it's true that, you know, North Americans did very little with public transportation, but we're also locked into a kind of settlement pattern, a kind of sprawling urban mess that is extremely difficult to provide public transport for, because you just don't have the density. And you have, you know, if you have stations, many people would have a very long way to walk to get to those stations and so forth. This is not an easy problem to solve. It's fairly easy to solve in a place like New York, but not easy to solve in places that have grown up with the automobile.
Now you're talking about all the wonderful additions that humans have made in making a human life more livable. Not for everyone, of course, on the planet. You also speak about the growing gap between rich and poor, which shows no sign of lessening. But even I was thinking of the social media we have, in which people have become addicted to all these little toys that get smaller and larger, that they can do everything they need to do on without having to think. That people even have lost the ability now to do addition mathematics in their head because they don't need to. They have a little toy, a gizmo, that does that for them. And I'm curious to see how your feeling is about social media on this whole question of our future.
Well, I'm of the generation that grew up before social media, so I don't really get a lot of it. I mean, I'm not on Facebook and I don't bother with Twitter. I have enough demands on my time without, you know, constantly checking these things to see what other people are doing and what they think about something I did. So. I'm pretty old-fashioned in that way. On the other hand, I do find the web very useful for certain kinds of research, as long as you cross-check carefully, because a lot of the information out there is not reliable. But I do use it, and it's certainly convenient to be able to send a manuscript to your publisher as an electronic file instead of a huge wad of papers, and in some ways maybe more environmentally responsible. But I do worry about what this instant gratification and also constantly being in contact is doing to the way people think, and particularly the way young people's brains may be developing, because the ability to plan ahead seems to be gone, and the ability to, you know, if somebody sends me an email, I might not answer it for several days, and I will think about it. But I think there's a tendency for this whole thing to speed up. People expect a reply, you know, within an hour, and then they send you another email back, and then you've got to reply to that one. On it goes. And this doesn't give people time for reflection. It doesn't give people time to, say, spend a whole day with a book. I think it may be getting us into that sort of lab rat mindset of constant gratification, amusing ourselves to death to pinch somebody else's book title.
Well, I found this true in the schools here, talking to students who admit that they cannot stand to hear silence, that they have to be listening to music. They don't love music any more than your generation or our generation, but they constantly need to be listening to something, and they do not have time or even consider reflecting. And using the term reflection was very interesting, because everything is rushed. I'm often disturbed myself when I send an email out and I get an immediate reply that somebody is just sitting there waiting for my email to come in and get a reply. And I'm the same way as well. I sometimes will sit on an email and think about replying and don't want to get into a conversation that could be done on the telephone if you want to do it immediately. So I understand that problem. It also eliminates the reflection about actually what is happening to our world.
Well, yes. We're being so distracted by all our appetites and entertainments that sport's another one. That's been around a long time, but that's another one. We worry about what the ball team is doing or something, instead of worrying about what sort of world our kids and grandkids are going to have. And that we are losing the ability to think ahead. And we actually, ironically, the computer gives us, for certain kinds of studies anyway, very good ways of modeling and dealing with highly complex data that one individual couldn't possibly master in order to make some informed guesses about where things are going. And it's, of course, partly because of this technology that we have these projections for the degrees to which the climate is going to warm. And admittedly, it's a big window between the sort of low estimate and the high estimate. But really, any warming is not going to be good. Anything certainly above a degree or so. So, you know, it gives us this ability to look ahead, but we as a species are very bad at looking ahead. And, you know, it goes right back to when we evolved as Ice Age hunters, as people chasing down mammoths and stuff like that. And you can see it in the past that, you know, people got so good at hunting that they learned how to drive a whole herd of mammoth or a whole herd of buffalo over a cliff and ate like kings. But then pretty soon there's no more mammoths around. And this is exactly what we're doing with our huge appetite for resources. It's not mammoths anymore, but we are using up the fish in the sea. We are polluting the oceans and the air. I don't need to go over it again.
You can listen to great speeches and interviews on accesssacramento.org, or you can go to greatspeechesandinterviews.blogspot.com.
Good evening. I am a reporter for Al Jazeera, the Arab News Network. And I am here this evening to dispel the ugly rumors that our broadcast contains secret messages intended for terrorists. That is not true. Our broadcasts are straight, just like your Fox TV. No. It's not true. We Arabs, we love your people. We love the USA. It is true. I have a little song to sing for you that will prove that. But first, I'd like to introduce my special assistant, Falala Smith. That's her married name. Yes, she is the winner of the Al Jazeera Wet Burka Contest. She has a lovely figure. Trust me on this. All right, shall we begin? Al Jazeera, jolly Al Jazeera. Al Jazeera, love the USA. You sing along with me now. Yes, you know this tune, huh? It's old Arab tune. Here we go. Al Jazeera, jolly Al Jazeera. Al Jazeera, love the USA. Afghan president is calm. Hope we don't see Karzai bomb. Karzai bomb, Karzai bomb. Oh, sing along. Al Jazeera, jolly Al Jazeera. Al Jazeera loves the president. We're in Cuban prison cells, locked in yours, not infidels. Infidels, Karzai bomb. Here we go again. Al Jazeera, jolly Al Jazeera. Al Jazeera loves the USA. Arab views are not so mean. That's how views in Gaza lean. In gasoline, infidels, Karzai bomb. Here we go again. Al Jazeera, jolly Al Jazeera. Al Jazeera loves the USA. For Iraq's rebuilding path, pick a leader, take a bath. Take a bath in gasoline, infidels, Karzai bomb. Jazeera, jolly Al Jazeera. Al Jazeera loves the USA. Salam, salam, glory.
So what we need is a transition to long-term thinking. We need, number one, to wake up and realize that we are perhaps, that this decade and the next one may be the last time when there's a chance to change our way of life and make it something that will endure. And, you know, I'm all in favor of civilization. I want it to last. I don't want to go back and live in a cave. And that's not an option anyway for 7 billion people. You know, when we lived primitively, we lived in very small numbers. And even as recently as 1820, before steam engine really took hold, there were only 1 billion people in the world, which is about as many as you can support using traditional non-industrial agriculture. So we're now 7 billion, and we've got to figure out how we can avoid a really horrible death for most of those 7 billion. at some point in this century. And the only way to do that is to make sure that there's enough for everyone to go around. And that's why I point to the gap between rich and poor, because if you allow the upward concentration of wealth, it guarantees there never will be enough to go around. And we see a gap between rich and poor now that is greater than at any time in history. It's worse than France just before the French Revolution. It's worse than the difference between the pharaoh of Egypt and the guy dragging the stones. It is absurd. There's now more people living in abject poverty, below $1.50 a day, than the entire population of the earth at the beginning of the 20th century. That's not progress.
It certainly is not. Write about the belief in and you go use the term 500 years, the discovery and pillage of the New World, and you go into that, but you talk about the experience of a relatively easy 500 years expanding and colonizing and taking over new lands that had led to the modern capitalist myth that you can expand forever. And
yes.
And we've reached the end, no?
Yeah, I think we've reached the end of an extraordinary 500-year period that I called in What is America, I called it the Columbian Age, but it doesn't really matter what we call it. But it was a time when an entire hemisphere of the planet was up for grabs by Europeans. And, of course, I'm talking about here in North and South America. And the thing that made it so lucky for Europeans was that it was not a wilderness. That people had been living here and developing civilizations and crops and various kinds of wealth, especially gold and silver, for thousands of years, just as long as people had on the other side of the Atlantic. But because of the vulnerability of the American populations to mass killers such as smallpox, which had not reached the Americas before, and for various reasons there wasn't anything equivalent to that in the Americas, suddenly you've got the kind of thing that the neutron bomb was supposed to do. You've got something that kills most of the people, that leaves everything, all the wealth and the infrastructure behind. And, you know, that goes right back to the Pilgrim Fathers. They when they landed on Plymouth Rock, they went there not because it was a wilderness where they could settle and do their thing in peace. They went there because they'd heard that the Wampanoags had been wiped out by smallpox. And this is the middle of the winter. And there are houses. There are stores of corn and other winter vegetables. And there are fields already prepared for planting. And the owners have all died. So they move in. So the expansion of Europe and then the settlers who came from Europe has been an essentially parasitic process on this half of the world that had developed in isolation before that.
They lied, they lied, they took us for a ride, tried burying the truth where it very nearly died. They lied, but no matter what they tried to hide, sing and shout, the truth wins out, everybody knows they lied. I ain't telling you nothing you don't already know, but the government's been lying to you, Joe. They're shaking your hand while showing you the door to a foreign land so you can fight the poor, where every Arab is a terrorist and they're hiding weapons that don't exist. You can join a coalition of willing nations willing to kill civilians for the corporations. They lied, they lied, they took us for a ride, tried burying the truth where it very nearly died. They lied, but no matter what they tried to hide, sing and shout, the truth wins out, everybody knows they lie. Tonight is the night that you give up your rights to the Patriot Act and the perilous fight, but you won't remember which country you're in when you wake up in the morning by the dawn's early light. If it reminds you of the Third Reich, you better keep quiet. If you don't like it, better watch your backs, cover your tracks, cause you're paying for it all with your federal tax. They lie, they lie, they took us for a ride, tried burying the truth where it very nearly died. They lied, but no matter what they tried to hide, sing and shout, the truth wins out, everybody knows they lied. Now come on, did you see that presidential smirk? Say don't look now, it's Captain Kirk. He's an arrogant jerk, though likable too, but the Federation's been lying to you. The Federation, the corporation, is supposed to be public radio station. They're violating the neutral zone to promote the imperial corporate nation. Blow up Afghanistan, nuke Iraq, we got the biggest phasers on the block. We're the world's policemen around the clock. You got the comm now, Mr. Spock. To the victors go the spoils, the lithium crystals, petroleum oil. They hate our freedom for no good reason. Arabs and Klingons, it's open season. They lied, they lied, they took us for a ride, tried burying the truth where it very nearly died. They lied, but no matter what they tried to hide, sing and shout, the truth wins out. Everybody knows they lie. So you know that the government's been lying to you, and I know that it ain't nothing new. That's politicians, that's what they do. They've been lying since 1492. They didn't teach me when I was a kid about all the terrible things that we did. We'll always honor this sacred treaty with a smallpox-covered blanket, sweetie. Agent Orange and napalm, Gulf of Tonkin, Vietnam, Iran, Contra, Watergate. It's a history of the criminal state. We're spoon-feeding it right out of the box. We're fair and balanced, says the Fox, while talk show shit are shouting out, it's liberals we gotta be worrying about. They lie, they took us for a ride, tried burying the truth, where it very nearly died. They lied, but no matter what they tried to hide, sing and shout, the truth wins out, everybody knows they lied. My mom said, really, if the news was controlled by corporate money and held in a stranglehold, I would have heard about it on the TV. If it was really so important, then I would have been told by the newscasters and the pundits and the anchors and their pals, the politicians, generals, and bankers. You say they're doing the old bait and switch, but why would they lie? They're already rich. Power corrupts, it's the ancient trend. List of lies will never end. New lies coming around the bend. Speak truth to power if truth is your friend. They lie to me, they lie to you, they lie to themselves, it ain't nothing new. They lie to the press who passes the buck. They lie to the world, now everybody duck. They lie, they lie. They took us for a ride, tried burying the truth where it very nearly died. They lie, but no matter what they tried to hide, sing and shout, the truth wins out. Sing and shout, the truth wins out. Sing and shout, the truth wins out. Everybody knows they lie.
And now for something completely different.